Hello and welcome back to yet another installment of Cooper Talks. What shall we be this week? Exhilarating? No, we've been that. Enchanting. Let's be enchanting, although given the nature of today's topic, might not be the best term. Because today, carrying on this little series on medical case studies and the history of Western medicine, I'm going to be talking about the cholera epidemics that afflicted London in the middle of the 19th century, and in particular the work of John Snow. That's not John Snow from Game of Thrones, but an anaesthetist and doctor type person who basically, like so many of the scientific predecessors in the history of Western medicine, was able to identify a problem, come up with a solution, but wasn't able to explain why the solution worked, as a result of which people ignored him. So let's look at this cholera outbreak in London. Now, what is cholera? It's a disease spread by bacteria. And what it basically does is, well, to put it politely, it causes you to bucket at both ends. Okay, so your body will basically get rid of absolutely everything inside it through the top or the bottom passages. Now, that's pretty unpleasant and dire, but what's really dangerous here is that there's so much of this going on that a lot of fluids are lost, and that means the people with cholera will tend to get severely dehydrated, and that would usually be what causes the fatalities and the deaths. Obviously, being dehydrated is not a good move. It will cause you to go lightheaded, but it will also cause, and this is how severe the dehydration was, it would cause people to, their blood would thicken, because obviously not enough water, so it becomes more concentrated, and that could burst blood vessels, particularly the smaller blood vessels around organs in the heart, in the brains, capillaries and things like that, and also those veins near the surface. And because those veins would rupture, your skin would look blue. So sometimes this gets called the blue death. Now, we do know today that it's a bacterial disease, and therefore it is spread through person-to-person contact or via water that is consumed. Okay, so it's definitely not spread through the air, but I bet you can guess how people at the time thought it was spread. So cholera has been around as a disease for a long time, but it actually only came to Britain in 1831. I think it had been largely centred on Asia and was coming with the trade routes. Anyway, again, as a brand new disease, a bit like smallpox, there's a little link for you. Not smallpox, sorry, that's completely wrong. A bit like the plague, that's the one. The Black Death, when that arrived in the medieval era, it spread very quickly because there was absolutely no immunity in the country. So the first outbreak really happened in February 1832, when there's about 5,000 or so deaths in London, just in London alone. And it would tend to afflict people in cities because you have crowded areas. And it particularly affected the poor. Okay, the cities had grown. There were a lot more people, and that included a lot more poor people. And these people were condensed together. They were sort of shoved into slum housing, workhouses, prisons, asylums. And where you had this large concentration of people tended to be where cholera would spread. Wealthier districts could get it as well because, you know, in a big city, you're still living fairly close to people. But they were a bit more spread out, and so it seemed to spread less quickly there. So it was a major concern to all levels of society. And there would be further outbreaks after this initial one. The biggest was between 1848 and 1849, where about 53,000 people across England and Wales would die as a result of cholera. Compare that to the 22,000 roughly who died in 31 to 32. There'd be another outbreak in 1854, about 20,000 died there. And then the last major year of epidemic outbreak was 65 to 66, when just over 14,000 would die. So we've got four big outbreaks that occur there. Now, how do people think cholera was spread? Well, medical opinion early on and in the middle of the 19th century, isn't it? 1800s. Gosh, I got confused by myself there. So this is in the middle of the 19th century. In the 19th century, this is before Pasteur and germ theory. So, although there are some scientific advancements, the dominant theory is miasma. So that miasma, possibly caused by rotting material, would be what caused disease. And therefore, the assumption was cholera was spread through bad smells and rotting material. Okay, so that does lead to local councils trying to clean up the mess of the slum areas. And obviously, because you've got so many people, the slum areas would tend to be the dirtiest areas of a city, and that's where you got the most cholera outbreak. So people thought, yes, this is how it goes. The first of the two major public health acts would be set up, trying to persuade local boards of health to provide clean water supplies as a means of keeping things clean and safe, and obviously don't want bad smelling water. However, because that was optional, didn't really have a major impact, and although it did lead to improvements in clean water in some areas, it didn't actually tackle the underlying problem. So no one really knew. That was the issue. So enter John Snow. Yes, with an H in the John, but not in the Snow. Surgeon, anaesthetist, moves to Soho, which, if you don't know, is in central London, just off Oxford Street. He was a pretty big name as an anaesthetist. He was the guy who gave the chloroform to Queen Victoria when she gave birth to Prince Leopold. So he's a big deal for anaesthetists and surgical developments. But because he lived in Soho, which had a large slum population nearby, he started observing the epidemics of cholera in 1848 to 49, the really big one. And he basically said that cholera can't possibly be treated by a miasma. As a surgeon, he knew about anatomy. And he said, well, hang on, if it was spread by miasma, it's through the air, and so it would afflict the lungs. But cholera affects the guts, not the lungs. So it can't be spread by air. It must be spread by drinking water contaminated by cholera-ridden feces. And the problem with this is, although people knew to keep the dirty water used water away from clean water, how far apart they were and how watertight they were was a matter of some debate. People at this time, remember, this is before plumbing. So people would generally use cesspits. I mean, they have at least... they weren't that far off the sort of Tudor era of throwing waste in the middle of the streets, but they realised that that wasn't good because it smelt. So what they'd done is generally, in all these areas, they built very large cesspits, which is around a central area where people would basically go to the toilet. It is a big hole in the ground, effectively. Now, they wouldn't just dig a hole. They would probably put bricks in there, line it in some way with some material to try and keep the water contained, and eventually someone... we get the lovely job of having to come along and remove all of it. But yes, from a hygienic point of view, it's not a good idea to have a great big pile of waste slap bang in the middle of a housing area. And yes, the more people, the more closely living together, the worse it's going to be. If anyone's ever had to use a porta toilet or a porta john in America, you know what it's like after a few people have been in there. So he comes up with this and publishes it in his book On the Mode of Communication of Cholera. His theory is dirty drinking water is the cause of cholera. So this is a big step forward in medicine. Now, when the new outbreak comes in 1854, it hits Soho particularly hard. And John Snow happens to be living there. So he goes, excellent, I'm going to investigate this. And he looked at the 93 deaths in his immediate area and studied them. What he did, very scientifically, he marked all the cases of cholera, cases of death from cholera on a map. And by looking at this map, he could sort of identify that people closer to a particular pump were much more likely to die from cholera. So he looked at this area off Broad Street or Golden Square. That is its name. It's not an advertising thing. Golden Square in the Soho area. And he recognised that within an area of about 200 metres around a pump on Broad Street, there'd been about 500 fatal cases of cholera. In the houses nearer to another water pump, there had only been 10 fatalities. And in all those cases, the families of the victim said that actually they got their water from the Broad Street pump. Okay, so basically the ones that had gone to the Broad Street pump, which was a smaller number of them because there was another pump nearby, those people from the Broad Street pump had died, whereas the people who'd got their water from the other pump were fine. There was also people maybe who didn't live in the area but worked in the area. Workers from a factory near the Broad Street pump were also badly affected, with 18 of them dying. There was also residents of a local workhouse nearby, and they'd had their own water supply, and despite being near Broad Street, they hadn't been affected. So again, it seems to be this pump on Broad Street is the heart of the problem. Again, there was a big brewery nearby. Now, breweries tended to be quite good at this time for surviving disease, mainly because the people who worked in breweries would tend to live off beer, and the beer was boiled. Well, the water was heated, boiled, so it killed a lot of bacteria anyway. But the brewery also had its own supply of water, and again, very few deaths there. There was a woman who lived in Hampstead, which is a long way from Soho, and she died of cholera. But it turned out she had once lived in Golden Square and had a bottle of water sent up from the Broad Street pump every day because she said she liked the taste. So, looking at this overwhelming evidence, John Snow basically says, look, it's clearly the cholera epidemic is coming from this pump on Broad Street. And having done that, having identified that as the source of infection, he removed the handle from the pump, and therefore no one was able to get water from that pump. And guess what happened? The cholera outbreak disappeared. It went away. It was gone. So he has found the answer, but he doesn't know why he's found the answer. Later on, people said, OK, seems to work. Let's have an investigation. And they dug down and found that nearby to this Broad Street pump, there was a cesspit. It was actually only a metre away. And although, like cesspits at the time, it had a sort of brick wall lining it to keep all the waste contained, it had developed a crack. And through that crack, some of the waste material had leached into the ground and had basically ended up, as water does, it sort of levels out and spreads, and it had leached into the drinking well, and that's how the cholera had spread from the cesspit to the water supply. Lovely water. Right, so pretty much a clear-cut case then. Except, as in so many of these case studies, while John Snow, as I said, he'd clearly found the correlation, he'd clearly been able to identify that the pump was the source of the infection, and removing the pump ended the infection or the outbreak. He couldn't explain why. Okay, he is doing this way before germ theory. He actually dies 3 years before Pasteur's germ theory is published. It's a long time before Koch and microscopes are able to identify bacteria, and particularly identify the cholera bacteria, okay, which Koch will do over in India. So because he couldn't prove it scientifically, his ideas were basically rejected, particularly by the scientific community. Now, John Snow does present his findings in 1855 to the House of Commons, to a committee on the House of Commons, I should say. And it sort of seems to prove it. And he said, look, we can do this. We just need to build a sewage network that will keep the sewage away and keep the drinking water clean, and that will stop all these cholera outbreaks. The government agreed to this, but very reluctantly, mainly because of the cost. And it said, all right, we'll give it to a guy called Joseph Bazalgette, and it would be done by 1875, so over 20 years. Because obviously digging up the whole of London and putting in sewage pipes would take a long time. However, what really motivated the members of Parliament was the fact that in 1858, the Thames, which was basically the sewage works, as well as the supply of fresh water for London, well, it was a particularly hot summer, and it was a particularly stagnant Thames, and it stank. And it was nicknamed the Great Stink, and it was so bad people were vomiting and struggling in Parliament. And for some utterly known reason, the MPs and Lords suddenly decided that a sewage network was desperately needed in London. And so they got it done, and the new sewers project was begun in 1860. And that's where the North Bank of London was developed and built to carry the sewage down the river and dump it in the river further down, which is bad news if you live along the Thames, but, you know, helps the people in London. Also, that's where the phrase, if you've ever heard it, to raise a great stink about something, kind of like to make a big fuss, to try and put pressure on people. This is where that phrase comes from, to raise a stink, to a great stink about it, because it was the bad smell that forced Parliament's hand. So in that sense, John Snow sort of had an impact on the sewage system, but most scientists rejected his work, as did most doctors and health professionals. Partly because he couldn't explain it, partly because, you know, people from further away from the pump still got cholera, even if it wasn't clear if they had been using it. But most importantly, for cost reasons, the General Board of Health kept to the theory of miasma, mainly because that just meant keeping the streets clean. John Snow's theory would mean that they'd have to provide clean water, so build pipe network to bring water in, and a sewage network to get rid of wastewater. And that was going to be too costly, and that was, well, that was the main consideration at the time. So the board argued that without scientific proof, John Snow's ideas were just theory. Well, that sounds familiar. It's just a theory, like evolution, some people say. And that's not right. But say, oh, it's a theory, so without scientific proof, it can't possibly work, so why bother spending all this money on it? That seems to be a common strand as well. So, again, very similar to previous outbreaks or case studies, the science lagging behind the individual identifying things hinders the immediate impact. So despite his evidence and his ability to demonstrate that cholera must be spread through water, because he couldn't explain why, and he died before Louis Pasteur, his work kind of didn't have an impact in the long term, at least not during this century, other than the building of sewages. So, I mean, it was great for the people of Soho, because by removing the pump, it has an immediate impact, and I'm sure they were very grateful for it. However, outside of Soho, it's limited, because it's not until the end of the century that there is proof to back up his points. So, what can we say about the whole thing with cholera? Well, if we look at the role of John Snow as an individual, obviously his observations are key, much like William Harvey and other individuals you might have looked at. He's actually come up with an experiment to prove cholera as the cause of dirty water, so that's a big innovation. He stops the residents drinking water, so prevents them from getting cholera. And he does, again, as has become a common trend, he's presenting his findings to the government to try and persuade the government to take action. What about the government? Well, it encouraged local councils to clean their cities and provide clean water. So again, role of institutions there. Parliament listened to John Snow's evidence about cholera, not that it worked. They did eventually arrange for a new sewer system to be built in London, at least, if not the rest of the country. And eventually it would lead to them passing the 1875 Public Health Act to force other cities to introduce their own sewage works. So overall, it was quite an important thing. Okay, so that was a bit of a whiz through the cholera outbreak as a key study. Now, I'm going to take a little break from the medical things for the next few episodes. I don't know what I'm going to look at. I might be doing some on the Soviet Union. I might try and finish off my Ranger podcast on the Cold War as well, and possibly do some on Elizabeth. So in the run-up to Christmas and after, hopefully there'll be a few more coming your way that will be of interest. But if not, why not go back and look at some of the classic Cooper talks? I don't get any money from this, so, you know, I probably should put adverts in. But, you know, I hope you are getting something out of this and enjoying them and finding them interesting. Anyway, at some point in the new year, I shall come back with some more case studies about medicine, including some of the events in World War One, as well as the major changes in medicine in the 20th century up until the present 21st century. Anyway, that's all from me. I hope you were enthralled by this episode. If I don't speak to you before, no, I will. I cannot end these. I just need to stop talking. So goodbye from me.